Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, June 30th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMED. In tonight's news, new home in Humboldt. Initiative aims to attract and keep skilled professionals. Fairness of Humboldt's cannabis tax aid is questioned. And Humboldt Bay Trail is finally opened. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. KMUD brings you today's weather briefing, provided by the National Weather Service at the Eureka office. Scattered dry lightning is possible today and tomorrow afternoon across interior mountains. A red flag warning is in effect from 11 a.m. today through 11 p.m. tonight. And a fire weather watch remains in effect from Tuesday morning through Tuesday evening. Any fires that develop during this period will likely spread rapidly. Interior heat will continue at least through Wednesday. For more information on the forecast in your area, visit weather.gov/EKA. CAL FIRE would like to remind all Californians that there is a no tolerance when it comes to illegal fireworks. The sale, transport, or use of fireworks without the Office of the State Fire Marshal's Safe and Sane seal is illegal, as is possessing or using any fireworks in communities where they are not allowed. Violators face potential fines up to $50,000 as well as a year in jail. Illegal fireworks include sky rockets, bottle rockets, Roman candles, aerial shells, firecrackers, sparklers, other fireworks that explode, go in the air, or move on the ground in an uncontrollable manner. To learn more about fireworks safety and to view a full list of jurisdictions that allow the sale of safe and sane fireworks, visit readyforwildfire.org/preventwildfire/fireworks-safety/. Home in Humboldt is the name for an upcoming branding and marketing strategy for Humboldt County. Backed by most of the area's major employers, including the hospitals, colleges, business organizations, and the county itself, the campaign represents the most concentrated effort to date to get qualified staff not just to come to the county. Sigur Bjorn has this exclusive for KMUD.
A huge countywide effort is in the works to recruit highly skilled professionals to come work, live, and stay in Humboldt County. The campaign, called Home in Humboldt, is spearheaded by the Redwood Coast Chamber Foundation. In close collaboration with the area's hospitals and healthcare organizations, both colleges, the county itself, and several business entities.
The healthcare system, so Providence, Open Door, United Indian Health, other health systems, as well as CR, Cal Poly, Humboldt Area Foundation, the county, City of Eureka, Coast Guard, and lots of others about how to attract and retain talent.
That's Nancy Olson with the Redwood Coast Chamber Foundation, speaking exclusively to KMUD. And yes, you heard that right. Even the Coast Guard is getting involved. Hiring and retaining qualified professionals has been a huge issue in Humboldt County for a number of years. Here is Jennifer Flores of the Humboldt Veterinary Medical Group in Fortuna speaking to KMUD about her company's hiring challenges.
We get about 18 months out of a veterinarian that moves into this area from out of the area. We get about 18 months that they work with us before they leave. So if it's not a veterinarian who was born, raised here, lived here, went to school out of the area, and then is returning home, we almost guarantee that they leave.
Flores' experience is illustrative of the frustrations most employers and recruiters countywide feel when it comes to staff retention. A sizable part of the campaign will focus on how to attract people in the healthcare field, which has had a particularly torrid time holding on to doctors and high-level healthcare staff. In fact, the project was initiated by one of the local healthcare CEOs, Nancy Olson again.
It was actually brought to me by Michael Kellerman, who's the chief executive at Providence, and that was, you know, a year and a half ago. So how do we get doctors to be interested in Humboldt? How do we get them to stay?
With both Cal Poly Humboldt and College of the Redwoods taking part, Home in Humboldt will also seek to attract teachers and academics, as well as professionals and skilled tradespeople from across the spectrum. The campaign represents the most concentrated effort to date to get qualified staff to not just come to the county, but stay here too.
How do we make sure that Humboldt's image is, you know, improved? How do we come behind people and help them connect to their interest areas in the community, whether it's their faith community or a cultural community that is important to them, hobbies, activities, and whatnot? This is really providing concierge services to people who are considering moving here, as well as those who land here.
Home in Humboldt is expected to launch by the end of the year. For KMUD, I'm Sigurd Bjørn.
As its June 24th meeting, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors received an update on Project Trellis and had concerns about how it's being administered. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's decision to allow Project Trellis grant funding to be used for paying cannabis excise tax debts has created what one county supervisor calls an unfair system where those who have paid their taxes have been bypassed for the grant funding. Another issue is that some of those who have gotten grants for things like water and energy systems now are out of business, with the grant-funded improvements either not done or adding value to properties whose cannabis permits have been revoked. Issues with Project Trellis, the county's cannabis business assistance program, were highlighted when the Board of Supervisors fielded an update on state and Project Trellis grant recipients who owe Measure S cannabis excise taxes. After the update, Supervisor Steve Madrone noted the board's decision last April to use Project Trellis grants to help farmers pay tax debts, which he said has disadvantaged those who paid their taxes and have been deprioritized for Project Trellis funding.
When they ended up paying all their Measure S taxes and their fees, and we're current on all that, applause, applause, I mean, doing the right thing there, they wrongly assumed, I guess, that they would still be funded for these, you know, solar energy, water storage, other conditions to be met that could be funded through Trellis and get assistance to do that. But then we as a board shifted our priorities away from that to having all of these grants go to those that had not paid their Measure S taxes. And so what we did was we left these people behind. We're now up in the 50s in the queue in terms of applicant priorities. We're funding those in the 50s, and there are those in the 20s and 30s that have now been bypassed because they paid their Measure S taxes.
Saying the board created a, quote, very unfair system, Madrone requested that staff be directed to evaluate what can be done to, quote, level that playing field and really make it fair. County administrative staff said the board will soon consider changing a Project Trellis policy manual, and that will be an ideal time to consider a fix. Another issue is that some cannabis farmers got grants to improve water and energy systems, but now their state licenses and county permits are suspended or revoked. That situation was discussed in this exchange between Board Chair Michelle Bushnell and Planning Director John Ford.
So if you're suspended or revocated, what does that do to your funding grant?
We're working through that right now. We are having conversations with the permit holders to determine what their plans are. Some of them have not installed the improvements yet, and the time to do so is rapidly. The end of this period is coming to a close. And so if they haven't done that, they really need to give that grant money back.
And I guess I'll just ask the big question in the room. Have you asked those folks, do they have that money still available to them?
In some cases, yes.
But not in all cases?
Not in all cases.
Okay.
As he's done in the past, Supervisor Mike Wilson talked about use of public funds in the context of grant recipients that are either out of business with their grant-improved properties up for sale or grantees who are defunct and haven't spent grant money on upgrades.
No question, but this is kind of going back to why I was suggesting that these be loans that are basically, zero interest repaid loans upon performance that are tied to the property. So that even if stuff gets installed and then the property is sold without a license, that at least the program recoups the value that then the property owner has just invested with public money to increase their value. I know that's not the intention. I don't believe people are trying to do that, but it's just stuff happens, you know, things move on. And then also to protect against, I think, what Supervisor Bushnell is talking about, which is handing out checks and then with no guarantee of performance.
Decision making wasn't agendized, so supervisors just voted to receive and file the update. They'll revisit things when the policy manual changes come before them at a future meeting. According to the update, 58 Project Trellis grantees owe Measure S taxes. The combined total amount of taxes owed by state and Trellis grantees is $948,000. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Humboldt Bay Trail opened this weekend. The trail goes from Arcata to Eureka, allowing the public to commute without a car, as there has not been a way to get to either location without potentially risking your life. KMUD spoke to Colin Sisk, the executive director of CRTP, the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities, to learn more about the excitement that surrounds the new trail opening.
The Humboldt Bay Trail, connecting Arcata and Eureka along the shores of Humboldt Bay, will be finally completed. And this has been, as you said, long awaited. Really, planning started all the way back in the 80s. So, you know, folks have been working on this for a long time. It's very exciting, providing this not only beautiful, but also safe and functional way for people to get between Arcata and Eureka, as well as point further north and south without having to bike or walk on the highway. So that's a really big deal.
A long time waiting, this trail now gives the public a chance to enjoy this with family or friends. Those who may not own a vehicle of transportation can now use this trail as a safer and easier alternative.
Up to this point, there hasn't been a way to get between them if you are riding a bike or walking or running or on a skateboard or a scooter or whatever. There hasn't really been a way to get between them without kind of taking your life in your hands on the highway or a similarly dangerous situation. And this will change that right away. It will really just create a safe and comfortable way for people to get back and forth outside of a vehicle, which is critical for our efforts to combat climate change, as well as to increase safety and reduce the number of deaths and serious injuries that we have on our streets and roads. And also just to provide a beautiful place for people to go and exercise and recreate and all that stuff. So just really exciting for a lot of reasons.
So what's next for CRTP? Sisk gave KMUD the rundown for the future projects and what is continuing for this Bay Trail.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a number of other exciting trail projects sort of connecting to this. City of Arcata is about to start construction on the Annie and Mary connectivity trail, which will extend this Bay Trail even further north past city limits all the way up to the first pump station on Badawat on Mad River. And there's the Bay to Zoo Trail in Eureka. There are plans to develop the trail further south down to College of the Redwoods. And obviously, all of these are really part of the Great Redwood Trail vision overall. So there's all sorts of cool things on the horizon there.
For more information of current plans for the trail projects or future projects, visit CRTP's website at transportationpriorities.org. As of yesterday, Southern Humboldt has been without local veterinarian service for 15 months. All this time, residents in the area have had to go to Willits or Fortuna to seek medical care for their animals. This is a part of a nationwide pattern. All over the county, rural areas are seeing their vets quit or retire, unable to find replacements to take over their practices. KMUD's Sigur Bjorn has the story.
The 29th of March, 2024, was the day Roy Smith closed his veterinarian practice in Garberville, bringing to a close decades of continuous animal care services in the area. Now, almost a year and a half after Smith closed his Garberville Redway Animal Hospital, residents of Southern Humboldt still don't have veterinary services and need to seek care for their animals either 2 hours south in Willits, Mendocino, or an hour north in Fortuna. Roy Smith's retirement and the closure of his rural practice is a part of a national pattern. A wave of animal doctors leaving the field, creating a vacuum the industry is struggling to fill. Here is Roy Smith.
The veterinary profession is in a huge shortage of veterinarians right now. Huge. So what's happening is all of us baby boomers that are retiring are not able to find replacements for privately owned hospitals.
So, as the baby boomers are getting out, the people entering the field of veterinary medicine are less inclined to run their own business.
Especially new graduates. New graduates in the last 10 to 15 years certainly are less interested to go and buy a practice and work right out of veterinary school.
That was the voice of Carl Jandry, Dean for Admissions and Student Programs at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. Here is Grant Miller of the California Veterinary Medical Association.
Newer graduates that are getting out of veterinary school are coming out of school with a pretty significant debt load. The average debt load of a new graduate is somewhere between $160,000 and $180,000. And so there are people that are getting out of school and they're not making a whole lot of money, but they have an awful lot of debt.
Someone who has firsthand knowledge of this debt load is Christopher Flores at the Fortuna-based Humboldt Veterinary Medical Group.
I have been in practice for 14 years and I still owe tens of thousands of dollars in school loans.
So who's left to purchase that practice as a veterinarian's retired? Well, it's going to be another single veterinarian who wants to live in that rural area, who wants the rural lifestyle, who wants to make a community out of it. Those folks are hard to find.
Hard to find, but they do exist. Roy Smith is one example, going back 20 years, and Jennifer and Christopher Flores at the Humboldt Veterinary Medical Group are another more recent example of out-of-area vets who decided to relocate to Humboldt County. Here is Jennifer Flores.
We are the only practice from like basically Eureka to Willits. We have been able to sort of absorb the influx of patients and clients, but I will tell you that it is extremely challenging. And one of the uphill battles that we fight in our profession is burnout. And so we're actually trying to work through a way to problem solve, not having our staff burn out, seeing an influx of patients.
Veterinarians now, me included, we have a fire in our belly for the intensity that we do and take care of the community, but we also realize that we can't do that 24/7. So we actually want to do something that actually balances our life and our work.
This new, let's call it holistic approach to work is not limited to veterinary medicine. Recruiters across the whole medical spectrum are reporting that doctors, nurses, technicians, and support staff are seeking a work-life balance that the baby boomer generation never saw as an option. This shift means there is a huge demand for more veterinarians to enter the field, despite the high number of people already in it.
It's estimated by 2030 that the United States will need 40,000 additional veterinarians, and by 2030, California is going to have a shortfall of somewhere between 1,300 and 2,200 companion animal vets.
In response to this projected shortfall, several states have either already launched or are in the process of launching new vet schools. Here is Grant Miller at the California Veterinary Medical Association again.
Our veterinary school is also taking a look at how it admits students and how it chooses candidates to be veterinarians, in hopes that some of those folks would be willing to work in a rural area as part of their career. So I'm hopeful that with the inclusion of those new schools and our streamlined licensing process here in California, that we should be able to see more veterinarians coming in the near future. I'm happy that the industry is responding in some ways, for instance, creating debt forgiveness programs through the government, in which veterinarians who work in designated rural shortage areas can have some of their loans forgiven.
In fact, right now, the United States Department of Agriculture is offering loan forgiveness as an incentive to fill a veterinarian vacancy in Humboldt County. However, this incentive is only available to those willing and qualified to practice food animal medicine and does not apply to cat and dog doctors willing to ply their trade in Humboldt.
For us recruiting a veterinarian to come and work, if there was loan forgiveness, that I think would be a draw to keep veterinarians.
So, somewhere between a more robust loan forgiveness program and veterinary schools encouraging more rurally minded people to study the profession, there may be a long-term solution to the rural vet problem. You heard from Jennifer and Christopher Flores, Roy Smith, Carl Jandry, and Grant Miller speaking to Lauren Schmidt. You will hear more from them during a half-hour special dedicated to the rural vet issue, nation, state, and county-wide, in a public affairs special set to air on KMUD tomorrow, Tuesday, July 1st at 5:30 p.m. The special will be available for streaming on KMUD.org for 2 weeks after airtime, and will also be available on your favorite podcast platform. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Sigurd Bjorn.
In state news, California resisting Trump administration deadline to change policies on transgender girls in high school sports, KPFA's Dahlia Lozier reports.
The Trump administration said Wednesday that California must change its policies allowing transgender girls to compete on sports teams consistent with their gender identity. The U.S. Department of Education says California's education department and governing body for high school sports are violating Title IX, a federal law banning sex discrimination in education. The federal government said California must agree to change its policies within 10 days or else risk imminent enforcement action. California, though, says it has no plans to change its policies. Department spokesperson Liz Sanders said in a statement, "The California Department of Education believes all students should have the opportunity to learn and play at school, and we have consistently applied existing law in support of students' rights to do so." In a webinar hosted by the California Women's Law Center and the Legal Aid Association of California, Juliana Gessiotto gave context.
We know that 21% of transgender girls K-12 report having been discouraged from playing sports, and 58% were disallowed to use the locker room that aligns with their gender.
U.S. Education Secretary Linda McMahon told Fox News that the department may pull federal funding if California does not comply. The Education Department said the state should apologize and restore awards to girls who lost sports titles to trans athletes and notify school sports programs that receive federal funding that Title IX prohibits trans girls from participating in girls' sports. The announcement comes weeks after a trans student athlete medaled in the California High School State Track and Field Championship. The California Interscholastic Federation, which ran the meet, awarded gold and silver medals to both Hernandez and other competitors who would have placed had she not competed. It was the first time the Federation made such a rule change. Jorge Salinas, a spokesperson for LGBTQ civil rights organization Equality California, suggested that all of this has much less to do with sports than it does with politics.
And this is an issue that is not about sports. We've been saying this over and over. This is not about fairness in sports. It never has been. It's about the federal administration weaponizing civil rights laws to target transgender students and force California to comply with their hateful anti-transgender agenda. So whether their threats are empty or have backing, at the end of the day, this is still unfair.
The issue is part of a nationwide battle over the rights of transgender youth in which states have limited transgender girls from participating on girls' sports teams, barred gender-affirming surgeries for minors, and required parents to be notified if a child changes their pronouns at school. At least 24 states have laws barring transgender women and girls from participating in certain sports competitions. Some of the policies have been blocked in court. Salinas says this announcement fits into the national landscape.
The U.S. Department of Education's so-called findings are truly a dangerous distortion of Title IX. It's a direct attack on transgender youth here in California, and we know it's part of a coordinated attack against transgender people in general. And right now, it seems like California has been the focus, the main target by the Trump administration for multiple reasons. But we also know that their plans have always been to create erasure, create obstacles, or remove just human dignity from the lives of transgender Americans.
Governor Gavin Newsom spokesperson Izzy Garden said McMahon's threat to pull federal funding over the state's policy was, quote, dramatic, fake, and completely divorced from reality. The governor's office said the U.S. Education Department's letter was not a serious legal document, but, quote, a political document designed to intimidate school officials and unlawfully override well-established state laws protecting students. Bay Area community members will gather at San Francisco City Hall Thursday evening for the Proud and Free rally for trans youth health care. Organizers are calling this moment a turning point and an invitation to fight back. This rally will deliver a petition with over 1,000 signatures to City Hall, demanding bold action to protect trans youth. For KPFA News, I'm Dahlia Lozier.
In national news, agriculture activists say Big Beautiful Bill would give billions to big agribusinesses, harm small farmers. KPFA's Anasuya Thurakat reports.
On Thursday afternoon, healthcare advocates from Service Employees International Union, friends and family members of mentally ill patients at the Behavioral Health Center, or BHC, in the San Francisco General Hospital gathered to protest against the city's decision to relocate patients from the facility as part of increasing the number of locked subacute units. SEIU member Jennifer Esteen voiced her unrest over the issue.
We're telling the city of San Francisco to open their locked psych beds somewhere else. There's 82 people who currently live in this building, in our residential care facility for elders and adult residential facility.
It's all part of the Breaking the Cycle plan, San Francisco Mayor Daniel Lurie's push to address homelessness and the behavioral health crisis in the city. As part of that effort, the city has secured $21.3 million in state funding. The money will go toward adding 57 locked subacute treatment beds at the San Francisco General Hospital.
A locked facility is a place where you do not have your civil rights. You are not able to leave. No one is able to come in without permission at a specific time. And you have to be conserved to be in a locked facility.
The City Department of Public Health says no one will be moved or lose housing until a proper personalized placement is found for them. Sharifa Rahman, who has been a mental health rehab worker in the BHC since 2001, is concerned for her current patients that she has been serving for a long time.
With my last 20 years experience with the same, almost the same populations, I have at least 6-7 of them been there for 20 years. This is nothing going to be same, I can guarantee you. Once they leave over here, they're going to stop taking medication, they will depress. They're going to be end up going to PES, psych emergency, then lock facility. Then that's the time they need more milk.
Debbie Gish, who is the sister of Donna Mateer, a 66-year-old resident at the BHC who has been living there for almost 20 years, also talked about her experience with the hospital.
This is a program that's working, and part of the magic is not just the building, it's the civil service staffing. So almost everybody in here, probably everybody in here, and I would challenge somebody to study the residents here, have been in and out of the street, psych hospitalizations, psych emergency, and private boarding cares.
According to the mayor's report, the Behavioral Health Center at the San Francisco General Hospital was originally built as a locked facility. They also noted that it is difficult to construct a locked treatment facility due to high building standards.
The locked facility here has 15 open beds, and they have not been full for many years. So it's really weird to me that the city would say it's so urgent that they need to displace people when they actually have open beds that they could try to fill right now.
The city is hoping to move the 82 residents within the next 2 years. For KPFA News, I am Anasuya Thurakat.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Sayor Bjorn, Dahlia Lozier, and Anasuya Torakat. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.